Ready to elevate your career with a professionally published book? Are you simply not sure where to start? Have you been searching down the internet rabbit hole for a self-publishing resource worth your time? Your search ends here, my friend. Let's walk the publishing path together and bring your book to life with the Publishing for Professionals podcast. I'm here to coach thought leaders, executives, and speakers on how to successfully self-publish your book while avoiding common pitfalls. I'm Lana Liquidy-Smarges, chief ghostwriter, editor, and founder of Unicorn Publishing Company, and have stood by the sides of many professionals just like you to walk them through the publishing process and successfully launching their book. Every industry pioneer faces the same daunting challenges: how to convert your hard-earned wisdom into a book that builds legacy with a voice that reflects your personal and professional brand. Join me each week to acquire practical wisdom and proven strategies and find out what the traditional publishing companies simply don't want you to know. Let's work together to tell your story with a book. This is more than just a podcast. It's your roadmap to becoming a published author. Get ready to write your blueprint for book publishing success with the Publishing for Professionals podcast. Hi, friends and future authors. This is Lana Liquidy-Smarges, just back for another episode of Publishing for Professionals podcast. And today I am so stoked to have my guest on, who is also a client. I helped him with editing his book. He is a fabulous, fabulous networker, and he's going to give us his perspective on how you can use your book for networking, which is one of the best use cases for your self-published nonfiction book, especially if you are a thought leader in your space. But before I have Alex come in, I just wanted to remind you to make sure you follow and or subscribe to the Publishing for Professionals podcast, wherever you are listening to it, so you can get every episode dropped as soon as they come out every other Tuesday. Today, I am joined by my guest. My guest is Alex Tremble. Alex is an amazing networker. He's one of the best networkers I know. He's the founder and CEO of an executive coach, best-selling author, and internationally recognized leadership expert with over a decade of experience. He coaches top executives and designs leadership programs. He's authored 4 books, including Unlocking the Executive Advantage, Relationships That Work, Reaching Senior Leadership, and The GPS Guide to Success. He's also the host of the internationally top 10% ranked podcast, The Executive Appeal. I highly recommend listening to it. I've learned so much about networking from his podcast and is known for delivering keynote addresses and facilitating events that leave audiences inspired and equipped for action. So without further ado, I'd love to introduce my guest, Alex Tremble. Alex, welcome to the Publishing for Professionals podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I do apologize. I have to call you out for misguiding our listeners, because she did not work on one of my books. She did not, that's not true. She's worked on multiple of my books. I have to be very specific when we put that out there.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate that. I loved working together with you. It was such a great experience from my standpoint, especially. I just loved working with you, and your work and your content is absolutely incredible. It's really great because I edit a ton of books. So I see content that's great and I see content that's not so great. You're definitely on the great list. So I appreciated working on your book because your content was so valuable.
Well, and I appreciate you just not being just an editor, right? The reason why I think these projects turn out so well is because it's a different perspective. The reality is I see the world from my viewpoint, from the eye expertise, from my experience, and having someone who can look at this and make sure, one, that it makes sense to the reader. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's for. It's not for me. It's for the reader. So making sure that someone, the reader, can actually understand exactly what I'm talking about, but also adding ideas to the table, which I always really appreciated.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And ideation is definitely one of my specialties. And I really love adding some book coaching in addition to. But to your point, that's absolutely true. Because even with my work, I have my editor who I have look over my work. Because again, right, it's someone outside your box that's giving you a different perspective. Because when you're in your box, you're writing things and you're thinking, oh, the person's going to understand that. And they don't always, because they're the reader, right? But we tend to miss that. And our brains are very good at filling in information for us that's not actually there. So let's start chatting about your books. I'm excited. So your last book that we worked on together, tell us about, well, let me back up a little bit. First, tell us about why you decided to write a book. Like, what made you decide to write The Executive Appeal?
So my first book was The GPS Guide to Success. And I wrote that in 2013, so a while back. And that was, the reason was because I started off my career doing some crazy stuff. So my first job was to manage and create the executive leadership development program for a U.S. cabinet level agency. And I got that opportunity when I was 23 years old, which made absolutely no sense. But it put me on the path of achieving what I've achieved thus far. I've been working with the country's most senior level executives, both private and government, for now 15 plus years. Back in 2013, I had all these ideas. I was seeing what was happening and what I could see what worked and what didn't work in regards to navigating one's career. And it was pretty obvious for me. And the reality is that I couldn't be everywhere. I was out speaking all the time. I got invited to the White House to speak. I got invited to colleges, you know, universities and organizations, but I couldn't be everywhere. So my thought was, if I can create an asset, a resource that people all around the world can access, even if I'm not there, I can have a positive impact on someone. And that was the genesis of the first book, The GPS Guide to Success, which just being able to, wanting to have a broader impact on people who I'd never maybe even meet. That was the first one. But the cool thing that came from that and every book moving forward is that the writing process is so powerful itself. Just literally having to write down your ideas and communicate them in a way that makes sense to someone who had no extra context what you're talking about. It allows you to clear up your thinking. It allows you to create systems and processes and methods for doing stuff that can be replicated by other people. And again, allows you to, you know, this is where, you know, what we do right now is we focus on TB3, which is helping executive teams increase trust, proactivity, productivity, and ultimately that relies and ends up being profitability for the organization. But TP3 was thought through as I was writing. I was able to put my ideas together and say, okay, how do I communicate this effectively to the audience? And this is why I'm such a huge proponent of writing, because it really does force you to clear up how you think about things.
I have a question for you, because a lot of my clients really struggle with this aspect of writing, which you didn't, which was, I was really impressed. But a lot of my clients just are like, I don't know where to start. I'm not a writer. Like, what would you say to people who are listening to this, who are thinking that and like, well, Alex, you could do it, but I can't?
What I always tell people, and again, you may have a different perspective, and I'd love to hear your perspective. If you're a professional, especially because if you're listening to this podcast, you are a professional. You are doing something. You probably have to write something at work, right? And what I pose you to think right now is, writing is hard. I don't think writing is ever easy. But you know what's easier? Editing is so much easier than writing. And so that's how I approach my writing. Is my job initially is just to get all of my ideas out, just literally. If I think this, I'll record it myself and I'll put it down. I just literally will create documents full of my ideas and the thoughts that I think need to be conveyed and I think that are important and so on and so forth. Because once I get all of that out, then I can just organize it and start editing it. And that has made the process for me writing so much easier. I think a lot of people get stuck when I talk to them. A lot of people get stuck when they think they need to write and edit at the same time. And that is not a great idea if you want to get this anytime soon.
No, and I don't even do that as a professional writer. And that's exactly what I tell my clients. I'm like, all you want to do is just brain dump it on the paper. Don't worry about grammar. Don't worry about titles. Mm-hmm. Like, you go back and clean that all up later. But just getting it out on paper, because the more ideas you get out on paper, the more ideas you have to write about in your book. So that's excellent advice. I love it. So with your book and your latest book, all of your books refer to professional networking, specifically for executives, which is why I invited you on here, because that is literally my audience who are listening to this. What would you recommend? So you published your book and you're a big networker. Obviously, that's your expert area of expertise. What would you recommend to people on how to network with a book that they have? And actually, let me back up a little bit. What do you say are the biggest advantages to having a book when you're networking? For you specifically, like, what did you see as your biggest advantages for networking with a book as opposed to when you didn't have a book?
Admittedly, it's almost an instant credibility, right? Because the reality is anyone can write a book. Anyone can write a book. Everyone does not write a book. And they don't write a book for a very key important reason. It's hard. And so it's like going to, you're getting your undergrad or getting your undergrad degree. does that mean that you're going to be doing, does everyone say, oh, wow, you got your undergrad degree, you know everything? No, because you end up going to different, you know, extra education, different work experiences, and so on. But what it does share to everyone is that you were able to be committed for a period of time, which you have a certain baseline. And so having a book allow people to say, okay, at the bare minimum, this guy knows enough or he was committed enough on this topic to get through something that most people do not do, right? So that's the first thing, is it, I think it does provide a level of credibility, does allow people to understand that you are someone who is dedicated and committed to getting something done, because then it's just not easy. The second piece is for having a book, it's almost, again, this is, you have to think about the purpose of your book, right? Mm. Like for me, I'm not looking to become a bestseller. Like, I don't need to be on the New York Times. I'm not interested in that. We as a firm work with literally, I don't coach more than 10 executives at a time. I don't do more than 8 retreats in a year. We are very, very focused on who we serve, and the level of service that we provide requires that we have, you know, 24-hour access and so on and so forth. Like we can't, if we had hundreds of clients, we wouldn't be able to provide the service we do. So I say it to say, I don't need this book to go everywhere, but I do need to go to the people, the specific people who we serve. And having a book that is written that is more general, like, oh, leadership. Like leadership is not a great thing for, I would just say my personal, what I've learned is that leadership is not a great thing to write about, because it's everyone. And if it's for everyone, then it's for no one. So leadership for executives. Oh, wow. Leadership for executives in the auto industry. Wow. Leadership for executives in the auto industry who are experiencing burnout. Wow. You want to speak to the exact person who you work with. And if you've done that with your book and you titled it in a way that when you are when you meet that person, you can say, hey, I have a gift for you. I have something I want to share with you. And they look at it and like, oh, wow, this is for me. This is not a random book off the street. This topic is something that's important to me. Let me read it. I think those things are really important to be thinking about on the front end as you dive into this process.
Absolutely. Yes. And I talk a lot to people. That's one of the first things I do when I get onto a ghostwriting consultation. I ask them, like, what is the purpose of your book? Because if you want to sell like a million books for $1 million, that's fine. But I hope you have a very good marketing plan in place, because that's a whole nother reason to write a book, right? But like, I think your reason is why most of my clients write their books for is that they want to have it as like a really great networking tool to stand out among the crowd. So when you do network with your book, how is it that you go about networking with your book, and how do you utilize it as a thought leadership piece?
Normally, there's two things I'll do. Either when I go somewhere, I will bring copies of my book with me, and I will always provide someone with a reason for why I'm giving a book. Generally speaking, it's not great to just give someone something, because there's no real value tied to it. But you could say, hey, I really appreciate the conversation we've had and the connection that we've had. Here's something I'd like to give you. This book is about building relationships. So the book before last is Relationships That Work. But here's something about building relationships, because again, this is what I'm an expert at. Boom, boom, boom. Or, hey, I really love that talk that you just gave. I'd like to share something with you on that topic. Here's my book that actually talks about some of the key pieces, but I like to also, do you mind if we meet for coffee? I'd love to talk to you about this more. So using it in addition to, so that just like, not just leaving them out there whenever possible. You know, sometimes you are in spaces, and I 100% speak in rooms where my book is just at the table and everyone gets a copy of the book. Like that's just what it is. But whenever possible, I like to be the person giving that book to someone, because I can tell them why I'm giving it to them, why it was important, and then following it up with, hey, look, yeah, I'd love to connect with you next week or so. Can we make this happen?
Yeah. And I think what you said about your avatar niche and the value that's tied to your book, and specifically being strategic about who you give it to, is very important. So I was at a conference one time, and I remember this author walking around, and he was younger. He's like, oh, I don't want to take my book home. I had extra books that I didn't give out here. And he's literally just handing his book out to people. And I'm looking at it, and I looked him up on Amazon. And I'm thinking, I'm never going to read anything from this author again, because if he doesn't value his work, why should I?
So the intention you give your book with is super important. But like you said, at the same time, if you're at a speaking engagement and you have your book at a table for everybody, that's the purpose of that book, right? Because people have come to see you at that keynote. So they're, mm-hmm. they usually are expect, like having a book just yeah. enhances that excitement about wanting to talk to you about working with them because they've seen your keynote. So that keynote is actually the strategic piece that hooks them into your book. But if you're talking one-on-one with person, absolutely, you need to be very strategic about not spraying your book, but saying your book and handing it to someone for a specific purpose, which is great advice. And that's actually how Tim Ferriss got his book on the New York Times bestseller, is he went to a South by Southwest conference years ago, and he had literally pages marked out in his chapters for different people to read specific parts of chapters. And he handed it to this one guy that was a columnist, and he wrote a big column about it, and it like blew up. That's really important to be strategic about who you're giving it to and telling them why you're giving it to them as well. That's really great. I love that. All right, my friends, we're going to take a pause right here. When we come back, we got more of Alex Tremble for you and some more awesome information about books, networking, and publishing. So stay tuned for the second half.
Hey friends and future authors, I know what it's like to sit alone at your desk and to stare at your manuscript and wondering if anybody else out there feels the same as you do. My friend, that is why I created the Publishing for Professionals community, a sanctuary for leaders like you who are crafting books to elevate your thought leadership. Imagine having a professional ecosystem where you can find other professionals who truly understand your struggles and celebrate your victories. A circle which offers genuine support and a place where fellow thought leaders gather. The road to authorship is better travel together. Come and join an alliance who speaks your language, who recognizes that your book isn't simply just a page with words. It's the process of creating your forever legacy. Join the Publishing for Professionals circle at www.writeforyou.me and click on community. Use the sign-up form and register today to gain confidence alongside others who now share your journey towards authorship.
Okay, we're back with Alex Tremble, who is a multiple author and networking expert. He is the executives networking expert, which comes to my next question, Alex. So your coaching program is just geared towards executives, which is why I had you on here. But I'm curious, like there's consultants, there's coaches, there's all sorts of people out there you could have niched this book to. Why did you choose executives?
That's a great question. I told you that my background started working with executive leaders. I've been doing it all of my adult career. And the cool thing I learned is that these people are people. It's weird and crazy to say, but that's the reality that they're people, but that's not what people see. They see them as titles. They see them as salaries. They see them as you're super successful. You must be smart, but you know what? Your life must also be perfect. You have all the money, all the influence. You have the title. It must be great for you. And the reality is any leader who's listening to this right now is probably saying, yeah, they have no idea. Because it's so hard. Not only are you responsible for everyone. So not only, you know, just not just you, but your team and your organization and your stakeholders and your stockholders and your community, whoever you're serving, the customers. But you also likely have a family. You also likely have friends who want your time, who want your energy, who want your support and so on and so forth. You may have health issues. You may have financial issues. I've met so many executive leaders in very senior level positions in large organizations who have imposter syndrome. They still don't believe they deserve to be where they are. But the reality is that when you're in these spaces, everyone expects you to be perfect or to shut up because you shouldn't be complaining because you have all the money, the power, the title, so on and so forth. So this is the group of people I love to focus on because the reality is that it's like one of the most significant leverage pieces that an organization can have. Because if they can provide their executive leadership team with the tools and support required to help them be successful, that means that their teams will be more successful and the customer will be more successful or happy. And the products, like the leverage that comes from supporting these people is huge. At the same time, if you don't support them, what all happens? Teams break down. You have higher turnover. You miss projects. Millions of dollars are lost because you don't have the right executive and the right support for that executive leader in place. And so this is why I love working with them because one, they need to know they are seen. They have someone who is in their corner, who understands their situation, because reality, even that their friends and their parents and their spouses may love them, but still probably don't understand what they're going through. And so we are that for them. We make sure we serve them both from a one-on-one standpoint, which is the executive coaching, as well as the broader context. No executive is in a vacuum. They all have a team. They have people around them. That's why we provide the executive retreats. And taking it one last thing on this is that this is why we talk about this from a psychological and sociological standpoint. So my background is in both psychology and sociology. And when I would tell people, like, look, if you go to psychology, it's great. You understand the person. That is really, really important. But if you go down the sociology route, you understand how the group operates and how the group functions. But why not understand both? If you understand how the individual thinks, as well as how that individual will operate within the group, then you have a recipe for so much success. And this is why we both focus on the executive coaching for the individual, as well as the retreats for the team that the individual is a part of.
I think that last point you underscored about understanding both is so, so important. And a lot of people don't consider that. They're like, oh, here's company culture, here's work productivity, and here's leadership, right? And it's great if all three of those are working well together, well on their own. And that increases work productivity. But what increases work harmony is when they work well together. Mm. And that's a huge difference between working well as just one team, like inside your team, and working well as an entire team. It gives a whole nother level to like what you can do if you're working in harmony with each other, rather than everybody's putting out their own fires or everybody's doing their thing and keeping their head down, right? Because like working in a team, yes, sometimes you have to put your head down, but sometimes you have to put your heads together.
I love it. Preach.
And back to your point where you're talking about a lot of people view executives as like the people that make all the money. And it's funny because I was listening to another podcast one time and they said, you know, the difference, there's really no difference between you and an executive because you both do the same thing in the morning. You get up and you put one pant leg on and you put the other pant leg on and you pull your pants up because they're people too. They just have more responsibilities. And with that responsibilities, like you said, like a lot of people don't understand how many responsibilities a leader has. Like for me, I've got a team I run to, and then I travel a lot, and then I have my family, and people are like, oh, you have such a great life because you travel all the time. And that's all they see is that one aspect. And I'm like, well, yeah, the travel's fun, but I also have to coordinate everything and care for my family, right? And so it is great being a leader, but to your point, you also need more support because you have so many more responsibilities than someone who isn't a leader in a team member. Not that the other team members don't need support, but you need a different level of support. You need a different type of support, and you need it at different times than other people need it. So I think what you're doing for executives is so important for like the holistic executive experience, right? Not just their work and productivity, but how they work with their team, how they feel with their work, and how that overflows into your daily life when you come home with your family. Because if you're not happy at work, it's going to overflow somewhere, and that's not going to be a good place for it to overflow.
I couldn't agree with you more. And if I can share really quickly two things. One, I was in a room with an executive team, and they had some senior leaders in the meeting as well. The organization was going through a potential financial crunch. So they're trying to figure out how they should do, what they should do, because they still wanted to give the broader organization pay increases. They still wanted to do that, but they weren't sure how to exactly make it work. And so someone, one of the senior leaders, was like, hey, I think all the executives should take a slight pay cut. If they take a slight pay cut, then we can make sure that everyone else gets the bonus and so on and so forth. And me being me, I'm looking around at faces and I'm like, some of these faces don't look happy. And right? So I went to each of those executives. The first one I spoke to, this woman, she was like, Alex, I can't do that. I'm taking care of me. I'm taking care of my parents. I have my kids in school. Like, I don't have extra money. And I spoke to every other leader, and they were like, they were all talking about the stresses they have. And I had to make the point later on when we came back together to have that conversation. It's like, I don't think we should be volunteering people's pockets because, again, they're people. Okay. And so, again, that's just another example of how easy it becomes to think that, oh, well, they got it. And I work with another organization that was crazy. They there's an executive team that did so well. They overproduced some platforms, and they were going to initially recognize them, recognize these leaders in front of the entire organization because for the hard work they did. At the last minute, they decided not to. Why did they decide not to? Well, because if we recognize this executive leadership team, then other employees in the organization may feel like we're only focused on the leaders, for on the executive leaders versus everyone else. So we're just not gonna, you're not gonna say anything publicly about it. We'll give everyone a pat in the back. And they felt like, why was I working here? Why am I doing all this stuff if I can't even get recognized? So my point in sharing that is to make sure organizations and leaders understand that if we're talking about that everyone matters, everyone deserves recognition, everyone deserves support, then what we're saying is everyone matters, everyone deserves recognition, and everyone deserves their support, not everyone who's under a certain level. And we have to get away from this idea of this dichotomy. Either you are this or that. Either you're in leadership or you're not, or like all those things is really, the world is so gray, and we have to understand that everyone has a different life. Everyone is experiencing different things. And so just because you see one version, one angle of who that person is, does not mean whatsoever that you understand who that person is and what they're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and to your point, when you're talking about saying, hey, we're going to recognize you, and then they pull it, that's worse than just not recognizing someone in the first place, because they're expecting that, right? And to your point too, it's like, yes, that's fine if you say, hey, this leadership team is doing great, and then have another day where you recognize other people for different things. But mm-hmm. I feel like, and this has been proven over and over again, right? Like when you feel unappreciated in a job, you go looking for another job. And or if you're treated unfairly, right? Because those are the two main reasons people leave their job, is because their management basically stinks. So, and they're not treating them with respect and or appreciation. So to do that really probably hurt the company morale big time. Mm-hmm. Because they had that in place and then pulled it away, which is not a great idea. So Alex, getting back to your title and leadership, so GPS leader, what does that mean to you? And what does that mean for your clients who hire you and have you come on to help them work through all of their challenges as a team, individually?
I love that. Short story, when I was younger, I was doing a lot of speaking opportunities. I remember I was been on a train heading home one night and talking to my mentor about I was giving a speech the next day. I didn't have a framework for it. And she's like, what are you going to talk about? And I was like, well, you know, how do you be successful? And but you got to know where you're going. I was kind of talking to her. She's like, oh, you're talking about a goal. You need a goal. I'm like, yeah, you have to have a goal. Okay. And then I was like, well, you need to have like, a way to get there. You got to think through, now you know where you're going. Like, how are you going to get there? And she said, well, it sounds like you need a plan. Hey, a plan. And I said, okay, but you got to remember in the real world, just because you know the right things and the right education and the right position doesn't mean you're going to be successful. You need to have the right political connections, the right relationships. And she says, well, you're talking about maybe strategy? And I'm like, yeah. And she says, it sounds like you got a GPS. I'm like, oh my God. GPS. So your goals, your plan, and your strategy to get there. So over the years, we've actually transitioned the S away from strategy, and we included that in the P. So the P is the plan, as well as the political connections required to get there. But we changed the S from strategy to stamina. Because if you want to be successful, it's not just about knowing where you're going. It's not just about understanding what you need to do and what connection you need. You got to be able to stay in the fight, because it's not easy. You got to be able to work through whatever situation you're going through. When I say work through, it doesn't mean kill yourself, but it does mean there are seasons in your life where you're going to do more than most people in order to get ahead, and you can't be afraid of it. Or you know what? You can be afraid of it. As long as you still do it, that's all that really matters.
That's actually something I was doing this morning, where I was doing something that I'd never done before, and I was scared as heck to do it. I was like, it's literally scarier than when I would cliff jump. I used to do cliff jumping and like jump 40, 50 feet off of cliffs in the water. It was scarier than that, but I'm like, I'm going to do it anyway. And I did it. And I was like, thank goodness I got through it. Right. But back what you're saying is working through things is really important, because that resilience piece, we're playing the long game, right? We're not playing this like, oh, this is a month or 2 months or 3 months. This is career. So in order to be successful in your career, you have to know how to solve problems. You have to come up with new ideas. You got to know the workaround, and you've got to be resilient. And that's not meaning like that you're stoic and you don't have feelings, but because we all have feelings, but it means understanding how your feelings apply to the situation and then moving forward and taking the correct action without acting out of fear or anxiety or stress, and acting from a spot where like, okay, this really stressed me out. I sat down and thought about it, and I think this is going to be the action I'm going to take next to move myself forward.
I heard this definition of resilience from Layla Hormozi. I love how she said it. Resilience is how quick you can come back to status quo. So when something goes wrong, it's okay to feel pain. It's okay to feel uncomfortable. It's okay to not be happy, to be sad, to be mad. It's like all those things are okay because you're human. And how soon can you pull yourself back up so you can keep it going? And when things go super exciting and you win and you're like, oh my God, this is so wonderful, that's great. You should feel all those things. And how quickly can you get back to normal so you can keep pushing forward? Because you can't win off of yesterday's prizes. You can't eat off of yesterday's food. You got to keep going. And so to your point, I think you're so right. It's like, resilience really is about like, how do you continue to move forward regardless of if things are winning or things are losing? You got to stay the route. And this is why, I talk about this, I talk about the new book I have coming out, which I won't mention the title yet because we're working on it still, but it will be out within the next 3 weeks, something like that. And it will address all of these pieces for those leaders who at the executive level know they want to do good, but they're feeling burned out. They're feeling like, why am I working so hard, but things are not moving at the speed they should be moving? This book will address that.
Awesome. And the other thing too, with moving forward and winning, one of the things I see, to your point, one of the things I see a lot of people do is they keep winning and winning and winning. And then they're like, oh, I don't need to do anything now because I'm winning all the time. And that's a really big mistake to make too. Because when you get too comfortable and something happens and takes away your wins, then you have nothing to fall back on because you have no process in place. You haven't been doing anything to fill your pipeline, et cetera, et cetera. So to your point, it's really important to keep that balance. Celebrate your wins. Think about how you can fix your losses and take that winning momentum, celebrate it, and use that energy to move forward, to keep creating and doing what you need to do.
If you are not doing something right now that makes you uncomfortable, that you're scared of, that is hard, then you are not growing. Even from a super simple example, if someone was bench pressing, right? And they're bench pressing, let's say 400 pounds, and they're cranking it out. They can bench it 30 times, 40 times. That still means they're not growing because it's too easy. And so you got to put some weight on. If you're winning right now, that is great. I'm happy for you. So what do you need to do now that's going to put you in an uncomfortable place so you can work, so you can grow, learn, and become stronger, even better than what you are today?
Absolutely. 110%. I actually just had that talk with my friend last week. I was like, she said, I'm too comfortable. I said, then you're not growing.
Absolutely. Which is why I'm so focused on, with the executives that we coach, and the teams we work with, like, we have to make sure that we're calling out that comfortable space, right? When things are good and you're just tugging along, again, not saying that you always have to be in breakneck speed, but it does mean that you have to be just acknowledge, okay, I'm not growing, and be okay with that. Say, I'm not growing and I'm okay with that, or I'm not growing, I got to do something about that. And so the organization we work with and the executive we work with, when they acknowledge, oh my God, I'm not growing, my team's not growing, their first thing is, yeah, we got to fix this.
And that's the important part, is A, being aware of it, that you have the issue in the first place, right? And then B, you have to take action. Because if you know the problem's there, but you don't take action, then it's whatever it is not going to go away. It's just going to get worse, and it's going to permeate through everything, and then it's going to cost your company millions of dollars. Like I've heard so many examples of that happening in the business accelerator that I'm in right now. And all these women are working with corporate in different aspects. And they're like, yeah, they're losing millions of dollars here and there, or whatever, because something's happened with the leadership. And that's so, so common and can be avoided if you catch it, especially if you can catch it early enough. So if you catch it early in the game, like everything else, and it's not snowballed, it's much easier to fix than if you're like waiting, like, oh, it's going to get better on its own, or hire this new person and everything will be fine, when it's not. That's absolutely correct. Well, Alex, this has been absolutely fabulous. And I know my listeners have gotten such great value out of your interview today. Thank you so much. Where can people find you? Because I know there's going to be people on here who are listening and they're going to want to work with you, because you're an amazing person to work with. I can say that from our relationship together, and you have a fabulous personality and you're very easy to talk to.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lynn. I appreciate you so much. I think the easiest way to reach out to me is either gpsleadership.org, or you can find me on LinkedIn. Again, for our executive coaching, we literally only take on a max of 10 clients at a time. So right now, I think we have maybe 3 slots open, but they may be closing soon. So if anyone's interested in executive coaching, you need to go to gpsleadership.org and just apply, because you have the application process. We don't select everyone. Again, we are very focused on the individuals who we serve at the executive level within the industries that we serve. And the reality is that we work with them specifically because we know that if we can make those slight changes with them and their team, they have huge compound interest of wins and organizations that, you know, we normally work with organizations that at least are bringing in about $50 million in revenue a year. If your organization's not there yet, there's nothing wrong. The reality is that they just generally don't have the resources to invest in doing the things that we need to do to get them to where they need to get to. So yes, linkedin.com, gpsleadership.org, and I'd love to hear from every one of you.
I would highly recommend buying any or all of Alex's books. They're fabulous network. If you are an executive and you want to learn how to network, Alex lays it out step by step. So super easy to follow. You just have to do the thing we talked about, which is taking action. So Alex, again, thank you so much for coming on today. This is great and definitely enlightening for people who are listening to this.
You are so welcome. I like to end every engagement I'm at, I encourage all of your listeners, stay strong, stay positive, and definitely stay moving.
And remember, my friends, if you are thinking about writing a book, make sure that you start. If you don't start writing your book today, you will not be able to help the person that is reading your book tomorrow. So until next time, remember to like and subscribe, and I'll see you on the next episode of Publishing for Professionals. Hey, my friend, thanks for joining me on the Publishing for Professionals podcast. I hope this episode has equipped you with actionable strategies for your publishing journey. Remember, your expertise becomes truly valuable when it's transformed into a professionally published book that represents your unique brand. The insights we've covered today will hopefully give you another piece of your publishing blueprint. If you found today's discussion valuable, make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you get the next episode dropped right into your podcast player. Each week, we tackle another essential aspect designed specifically for busy professionals like you. Remember to start the dream of writing your book today, because your strategies could be the missing piece in someone else's success puzzle tomorrow.
The information in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The content shared by the host, guests, and any affiliates is not intended to substitute for professional legal or financial advice specific to your situation. Always seek the advice of a qualified professional with any questions you may have. The opinions expressed on the show by the host or guests are of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of Unicorn Publishing Company. Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, guests, and affiliates are not responsible or liable for any decisions made by listeners or action taken hereto based on the information discussed in this podcast. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to release Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, affiliates, and guests for any liability.